Trade war is everywhere. It means that the Iran war might be about to become a whole lot more disruptive to your life. Trade war featured in the World Cup this week. Trade war with Brazil is our US correspondent's top pick for this week's news. Why is the world heading towards trade war? Does it really matter? And what does your Bible have to say about it? Let's find out on today's Trumpet World. The Houthis in Yemen could be about to join in the Iran war. They've interrupted traffic through the Red Sea before. Now the world faces the prospect of a coordinated blockade of both the Red Sea and the Strait of Hormuz at the same time. Why are we in this position? What could this mean to you? Well, we'll go to our Middle East correspondent, Mihailo Zekic.
Yes, the action started Monday when Saudi Arabia bombed the main airport in Sana'a. That's the capital of the Houthi territory in eastern Yemen. The catalyst was a plane arriving from Tehran containing the Houthi delegates to the funeral of the late Ayatollah. The plane itself landed somewhere else, and the Houthis retaliated at a small site in Saudi Arabia. So it looks like the initial ripple effects of this one particular event have been contained, but it does highlight how vulnerable this part of the world is. The Houthis, they're a terror group. They're a Shiite Islamist group. They're a proxy of Iran. They've sat out most of the current fighting of this war, and a lot of people have been wondering why, but a lot of people are also looking at events like this and showing, okay, the Houthis are still in play. They're being targeted in this case. They could decide to destabilize everything in their part of the Middle East as well soon.
So have we seen any signs of them following through on this and closing the Red Sea?
They've been saying they were going to do that for a while. Most, from what I understand, most international shippers still avoid the Red Sea after what happened after October 7th. So it's not like this trade corridor is being that heavily used in the first place. But with the plane itself, there are rumors from the U.S. government that that plane was carrying weapons and Iranian technical experts to help out with the Houthis with the rearmament leading up to perhaps more involvement. According to media reports, the de facto leader of Saudi Arabia, the Crown Prince, he spoke with President Trump on Friday about this attack to coordinate it with him, and he apparently gave his blessing for it. So whatever's going on there, I mean, Saudi Arabia and the U.S. have had so many problems with Yemen, I don't think they would go out of their way to antagonize them and give them an excuse to join the fight unless if they were expecting some preemptive attack from their end.
So we've been closely watching Hormuz, the Red Sea, all of these sea gates because of Bible prophecy. Why?
Well, same prophecy we go to for anything to do with Iran. Daniel 11, which speaks of an end-time king of the south provoking world war. As our editor-in-chief, Mr. Joe Fleury, has said, for decades, this is Iran and radical Islam pushing against Europe, being provocative. Verses 42 and 43 talk about some countries that'll be allied with Iran. It mentions Egypt, it mentions Ethiopia, it mentions Libya. These countries haven't fallen to Iran just yet, but as Mr. Fleury writes in his book, The King of the South, this describes Iran's overall strategy of going after significant territory in the Red Sea area, in the Mediterranean Sea, in the trade routes that lead up from the Middle East to Europe. For the past few weeks, we've talked extensively about Hormuz and the oil trade being bottlenecked and how much leverage Iran has over that maritime choke point. Iran also has influence in the Bab el-Mandeb, the southern exit point of the Red Sea, which directly borders Houthi territory. And it's used that control for leverage during the October 7th war against Israel. Again, we haven't seen Iran use that sphere of influence as much in this round. The Houthis are still licking their wounds, so to speak, from the Israeli bombardment from last year, but they're still around, they still have weapons, and Iran doesn't intend on letting them go anytime soon. And according to Bible prophecy, we're not only expecting Iran to consolidate its influence in that area, but spread to even more areas and be able to use it in a way that really hurts Europe, that really hurts the global oil trade.
Thank you for that, Mihailo. We'll come back to the Middle East for some other important stories. But while we're talking about trade war and you know, the prophecy you outlined is not the only one that talks about a coming trade war and conflict. And in fact, you know, you could almost say Bible prophecy tells us there are multiple trade wars coming. Let's go to Andrew Miller and bring in your top story, which I think revolves around trade war with Brazil.
Yeah, there's trade wars all over the world. And I think Latin America is one of the most underrated fronts in this trade war. The Middle East gets a lot more attention, and understandably so, in that the fact that, like, the U.S. dollar, it's basically based on a promise the United States has made with the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Nations to defend the Strait of Hormuz. They defend that strait, then the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Nations makes sure that all oil around the world's traded in dollars. And so that's like the bedrock that's keeping the dollar as the world reserve currency. Latin America, what's at stake's a little different. It's not so central to the petrodollar. However, the entire continent is full of minerals, lithium, copper, especially rare earth minerals, that the United States does not have in abundance here at home, yet still needs to make advanced electronics. And so this is a huge vulnerability for the United States. Like food, we get a lot of food from Latin America, but we have food here too. We can grow food here too. Forest, we have forest in America. The one thing that we really are reliant on for our industrial technology is a lot of these rare earth and other minerals, which means we need good relationships with Latin America, relationships that are not so good right now. The Trump administration announced this week that they plan, before the end of the month, to put a 25% tariff on Brazil. Now, this is the Trump administration's first major tariff since the Supreme Court ruled a few months ago that they cannot use like the Emergency Powers Act to unilaterally impose tariffs due to a national emergency. The Supreme Court made that ruling. Now, so what President Trump's doing here is he's not violating that Supreme Court ruling. He's using another more specific act that the Supreme Court hasn't ruled on, saying that he's putting tariffs on Brazil, not because he feels the trade deficit is a national emergency, but particularly because Brazil is engaging in unfair trade practices on many fronts. Everything from digital currency to deforestation of the Amazon rainforest to how it sells ethanol, a number of practices that the U.S. is saying it's breaching unreasonable trade laws. And so it's putting this tariff not as a blanket tariff on all nations like Trump tried to do last year, but as a very specific tariff on Brazil. The Brazilians aren't too happy about it. The president of Brazil, who's a left-wing president, President Trump had much better relationships with Jair Bolsonaro, his conservative predecessor. So the president of Brazil's, he's actually accusing Trump of trying to target him politically in an effort to bring the conservative movement back to Brazil. So he's trying to make it very personal in that way, and said that he's going to be looking at retaliatory tariffs on the United States, because if this 25% tariff goes through, I think it's supposed to be put on the 22nd, which is next week, that would actually make Brazil the second most tariff country by the United States on earth, only after China. So China would be our number one tariffed nation, and Brazil would be number two. So definitely showing strong economic tensions between the United States and Brazil. If this goes down through, a breakdown in trade between the United States and Brazil, which just recently became more important because Brazil is the biggest member of the Mercosur Alliance, which also includes Venezuela and not Venezuela, Colombia, Argentina, Venezuela is a suspended member, and some other South American nations. And so if you've got bad relationships with Brazil, that can spill over into bad relationships with the rest of the Mercosur Alliance, which as of January 17th, several months ago, has signed a provisional agreement. They're still working to be implemented with the European Union, forming the largest free trade zone on Earth, 700 million people between the European Union and Brazil. So we had a cover story at, a couple months ago on the Trumpet. I think it was our February issue. Could have been our March issue, but no, I think it was the February issue. Talking about Germany turning the world against America. And it's our editor-in-chief had the main story about how really Germany and the European Union have had a long-term plan to integrate Mercosur and South America into their economic bloc so that they could besiege the United States. Many Bible prophecies in Deuteronomy 28, verse 52, about your high and fenced walls coming down and your enemies besieging you in all your gates. So we've been talking about sea gates and Hormuz. That's part of this prophecy. But there's also for America, what's arguably just as important or even more important than Hormuz is sea gates like the Panama Canal, the Straits of Yucatan, the Straits of Florida, the Yucatan Channel. These maritime choke points in South America. So logistically, Mr. Fleury makes his point in that Trumpet edition I just mentioned. Logistically, for the European Union to besiege the United States, like prophecy says that they will, they need Latin America. They need the Panama Canal. They need Cuba. They need other points in order to control these choke points. But they also need the mineral wealth of Latin America. All the way back in the 1960s, our predecessor organization, The Plain Truth, was writing about how America was going to be industrially starved by this EU-Latin American alliance. Gets back to what I was mentioning earlier, that like we could be, and largely are, food independent, but we need industrial minerals, like American industry. We don't have all the rare earth minerals and stuff here. So we need these industrial minerals from Latin America. So the fact that the European Union is building this trade alliance with Latin America is a big deal. And the fact that the Trump administration is no longer getting along well with the largest member of Mercosur, actually elevating them to basically America's number two trade rival after China, if you're using what percent tariffs are on the nation as your proxy for how the trade relationships are going. You can definitely see this beginning where the U.S. is losing Latin America, the EU is gaining Latin America, and it's going to end with a giant trade siege on America that will ultimately lead to the starvation of American industry unless the nation makes a U-turn in its moral character and starts receiving God's blessings again.
And that ties in nicely with something I wanted to talk about as well, where you saw this prophecy on display even at the World Cup this week. Because this is where it kind of brings together these two stories: to wage trade war, to block the United States and other nations out from world trade, you need to control choke points. You need a network of bases around the world if you're going to have a global navy, and then you need to be able to close maritime choke points. And of course, The most tragic news this week is that England was defeated in the semifinals against Argentina. Once again, we didn't make it to the World Cup finals. Football is not coming home. Despite being 1-0 up, we let it get away. A couple of goals scored. And what always surprises me whenever England play Argentina is how much we live rent-free in their head. Like, we barely talk about or think about Argentina. Meanwhile, Argentina were kind of obsessed with hating England. And at the end of the game, some of their players held up a banner that says, Las Malvinas son Argentina. The Malvinas are Argentine, using their kind of fake name for the Falkland Islands. And you know, that's the real rematch that they want. They want a rematch of the 1982 Falklands War. Much more important than a football game and a war they very comprehensively lost. And the fact that they would just bring it up after a game decades later, they're still itching to have a crack at the Falkland Islands. And then the Argentine government followed that up right away by trying to stir up geopolitical tension. There was a routine Royal Navy transit of the Straits of Magellan. It was basically just sailing a ship, a relief ship, really, but HMS Medway. It's not a battleship, even if it is an HMS, but it was transiting from the Falkland Islands to Chile to pick up supplies, and Argentina accused Britain of being an unauthorized and unlawful transit, and they kind of lied about some of the details of being notified to do that. So you see, again, they're trying to even use the World Cup to make this controversial, and the Falkland Islands, they're a much richer prize today. There are a lot of people in the 1980s, even in Margaret Thatcher's own government, who just thought they weren't worth defending. Now, there's an estimated $60 billion of recoverable oil in the sea around the Falklands. So they're still very much in contention. And then also this week, one of the world's most important choke points was the Strait of Gibraltar. And Spain basically took possession of that this week. They've wanted that for a long, long time. And at midnight, July 14th, border controls between Gibraltar and Spain ceased. The police and custom posts along the border were demolished. The Spanish Prime Minister, Pedro Sanchez, he said the last wall in continental Europe has fallen. And now Spaniards are free to come and go to Gibraltar. But if British citizens knew, if I tried to fly to Gibraltar, I would need to show my passport to a Spanish border guard. From going from England, British territory, to Gibraltar, British territory, I need to show my papers and I need the permission of Spanish border guards. You know, if Spain controls the entrances and exits to Gibraltar, is it British territory in meaningful sense? I mean, okay, maybe on paper it still is, but they have control. And this is another prophecy. I mean, these are prophecies written thousands of years apart that just tie perfectly together. They help you see the mind of God behind the whole Bible. I mean, Simon was talking about Daniel 11 and how Iran was prophesied to attack the king of the north. And even you look at those details and it's implied they're going to use sea gates and they're going to shut off trade. And, you know, Andrew brought up the Mart of Nations and a global trade war and America being cut off from world trade. You can go all the way back to the book of Genesis. You know, you're kind of getting to Abraham well over 1,000 years prior to Daniel. And God promised Abraham's descent that Abraham's descendants would possess the gate of his enemies and the gate of them which hate them. And it uses this term gate in the same context as it's talking about hundreds of millions. So this is clearly not a garden gate. Like, what is a gate when you're talking about hundreds of millions of people? Well, it is these kind of geographic choke points. And God promised the children of Abraham that they would control these vital choke points, these vital sea gateways. And you can trace Abraham's descendants just looking at who was given these choke points, these gateways. It's Britain and America. Two descendants of Abraham. And Mr. Armstrong proves more that these two nations are his descendants in his free, in, well, that are Abraham's descendants in his free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. But God also said that these gates would be taken away. He gave Israel, well, here are the blessings and the cursings. that are going to come if you don't obey me in Deuteronomy 28. And one of those in verse 52 says that, well, there would come a point that instead of possessing the gates of your enemies, it says your enemies shall besiege you in all your gates. If Israel did not obey God, they would lose the gates. Enemy nations would use the gates and shut them off from world trade, besiege them using their gates. And then again, this ties right into what Iran is doing, using the Suez Canal that Britain once owned, once they kind of get control of Egypt. You know, Britain once controlled the Red Sea and had control of Egypt and Sudan and all of this. And now Iran is moving into that area, getting control of that area, using it to attack not just Britain, but to besiege many nations. Britain losing Gibraltar, the Falkland Islands. So they will go at some point. And all of these nations, you know, Britain and America use these gates for free trade. They're going to be used to besiege the world. So a wonderful example of prophecies throughout your Bible tying together, prophecies tying even into sports news and the World Cup. You know, the Bible is a now book, and it's something that is beyond the capability of any man to coordinate all of these different details that are sprinkled through these books written thousands of years apart. And they all come together in a perfect whole. And it describes your world and it describes your life. You know, God rules in the kingdom of men, and this is Satan's world, but God can still make sure his will is carried out, and he is more than capable of protecting you and prospering you. If you show that respect for the power of the Bible and look to those words, see them as coming from the Almighty Creator God, and let those words dictate your life and live your life by what is written in the Bible. And you can really dig into what the Bible says about Bible prophecy, but also what the Bible says for you in Mr. Armstrong's book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. There's a lot of very practical information in there and a lot of information for understanding world news, and Seagates is just, and global trade is just one of the critical subjects covered there. So we've kind of hit a few different regions all on this same theme. But maybe now if we return to the Middle East, we'll go back to Mihailo Zekic. I mean, there have been some other pretty eye-catching pieces of news from the Middle East this week. Mihailo, what can you tell us about those?
Well, actually, your conclusion there helped set me up for what I'm about to talk next. On July 13th, the New York Times released a bombshell report that Israel had been cultivating a senior Iranian official almost as their puppet to install as the leader of the next country if the war, which started in February, would have went according to plan. Who is this leader? Well, none other than former President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who was running the affairs of the government under the Supreme Leader from 2005 to 2013. Some people that have been following us for years back then would probably remember that name, as he was arguably Iran's most firebrand president. He famously said that Israel needs to be wiped off the map. Some people say that should actually be translated wiped from the pages of time. It was under him that the nuclear program got ramped up to be this international crisis point that it is all these years later. He's not a cleric, but he was probably the most fundamentalist, rabidly extreme, at least publicly, president that Iran has had. There are rumors that when he was mayor of Tehran, he was even designing a boulevard in the city to welcome the arrival of the Shiite Messiah, the 12th Imam, into the city. There were stories that he travels with personal exorcists and other mystics to help him speak with the spirits. And with all that being said, he has had a falling out with the late Supreme Leader. He wanted to run for president again. He was repeatedly barred from doing so. He's accused the Tehran establishment of corruption. And according to this report and a similar report by Haaretz, the Israeli paper, Israel recognized him as an opposition candidate now. Like, oh, wait, we could work with him. We can actually prop him up. And they've apparently been having contact with him since at least 2023, meeting with him in third countries. And even Mossad director David Barnea himself reportedly spoke to him in Budapest. Now, Iran has apparently gotten whiffs of this and put him under house arrest for a long time. When the war started, One of the targets of Israeli bombs was his security entourage, locking him up. And then when that was all in disarray, a black Mossad vehicle came, picked him up, and took him to a safe house. He's apparently was disillusioned with the whole plan left and was last seen at the Ayatollah's funeral. But I just have to say this. What was Mossad thinking? What was Prime Minister Netanyahu thinking with propping up a character like this? This is somebody that was the poster child of everything Iran represents as far as threatening Israel's existence goes. Okay, yes, maybe he's had a falling out with the Ayatollah. By what we can see, his problems were not with the radical Islamist theology or the purpose of the Islamic Republic. He was just disillusioned with the people at the top supposedly leading that movement. Even if he supposedly said that, okay, he wants to work with you and now he'll be a better leader, I mean, he also said Iran never wants a nuclear weapon. Nothing this guy says that front can be believed. And I think this ties in with what you're saying in how God wants us to direct our lives. God wants us to look to him for protection. He wants us to fight our battles for him, to rely on him in faith rather than our own strength. When the Jewish nation in the 6th century BC was facing a similar crisis where they were relying on their own power or on foreign allies to defend them from the Babylonians, God inspired the prophet Jeremiah to say in Jeremiah 17:5, "Cursed be the man that trusts in men and makes flesh his arm and whose heart departs from the Lord." God wants, in this case, a nation like Israel that claims to be following God's righteousness, that is descended from the ancient nation that God worked with and still holds some pride in that heritage, to still do what their forefathers did, in some cases, the righteous leaders, and follow God's guide. But if you're not going to look to God to deliver you from war, if you're not going to look to him in faith and in repentance, then all you have is man to trust. And in this case, not only are they trusting their own soldiers, they're trusting the least trustworthy man you could possibly think of to solve the problem with Iran. And there's a book we don't offer too often on this program, but it ties in with this. Like you said, it's not just for governments to learn. It's a lesson for individual lives. It's called What is Faith by Herbert W. Armstrong that explores this topic in a more broader sense of what you can apply in your own life.
Sorry, just before we move on from this, I mean, I guess if you're going to rely on your own resources, wiser servants, harmless as doves, maybe there is a case for sneaky tactics to get somebody you've got to bribeable, compromising material on in power. I mean, what do you make of this story that this was basically all set and ready to go? The Kurds were armed. A coup was all planned out that Israel had been working on for quite some time. And then at the last minute, Donald Trump stepped in and said no.
Well, this ties in with the same principle. Everything was reliant on what President Trump, the most pro-Israel president in America's history, supposedly.
Is that an accurate picture of the facts?
Well, all we have to rely on is anonymous sources speaking with a handful of newspaper of records that have a left-wing bias anyway. But assuming that's true, most of that report comes from the Haaretz report I was talking about. And assuming that's true, the reason President Trump pulled out, or at least one of the big reasons, was Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Supposedly, Israel already had the guarantee of 11,000 Kurdish soldiers that, by their accounts, are even better trained than the IDF in Iraq, ready to stream over and liberate their Kurdish brothers. They were also working with other nations like Azerbaijan. There's a lot of Azeri people in Iran as well. The government in the tiny country of Azerbaijan would like those people liberated. And everything was ready to go, but Erdogan, Turkey also has a big Kurdish minority, phoned President Trump and said, this is going to cause problems for me. All of a sudden, the Kurds on my end are going to want independence. Not an unreasonable position for him to have. But President Trump took that, okay, if Erdogan's not in, I'm not in. And the Kurds said, if America's not in, we're not in. We've been betrayed by America too many times. And Israel was left basically on its own trying to get in regime change. Aside from, again, showing what happens when you rely on fellow humans, even if those people are a bit more reliable, we've had plenty to say on this program, Mr. Flurry, Mr. Armstrong, have had plenty to say on how Turkey, especially the current Turkish government, about having a very special end-time role tied into betraying not just the Jewish state, but also the United States, and that if America is leaning on Turkey and its support more than Israel, that was very much on display at the Ankara summit recently. At the very least, nothing good can come from that.
Great, thank you. I'd seen some other headlines around that Harat story, so I wanted to get that clarification. What was that final story you were going to launch onto?
Yes, the Israeli Knesset passed 65-51, a new law curbing the power of the Attorney General in Israel. In Israel, the Attorney General is not a cabinet member accountable to the government. She's her own institution. Gali Baharav Miara is the current one's name. And not only is she the chief prosecutor of the government, putting in criminal indictments, but any judgment she makes based on the flimsiest terms of legalese is basically a unilateral nationwide injunction on what the government, what the members of the government can and cannot do. Basically, it's one person that's unaccountable to the electorate, unaccountable to the government, whose word is law. And this new law that they passed basically takes away that ability for her to practice that. She can still put in criminal indictments, but she can't say what the government is doing in this policy is beyond reasonable, so I'm forcing the entire government to stop because I say so. This law isn't going to come into effect until January, and Prime Minister Netanyahu could lose power before then. But the Trumpet has written before about how Israel's so-called rule of lawyers and this judicial elite, this unaccountable elite, has been a big thorn in the Israeli government's side, and this may be one step of finally curtailing that power.
Thank you for that, Mihailo. Now, I guess if we go back to Andrew Miller, because we also cut you off before you could get into the other stories from the English-speaking world.
Yeah, we've got a few domestic stories here in the United States that I wanted to bring to people's attention. One of them, just highlighting the political violence in America, is the Supreme Court sent two justices, Amy Coney Barrett and Elena Kagan, to Congress this week to ask for more money for security. We're in an environment where people have tried to assassinate President Trump at least four times. Charlie Kirk was assassinated and his murderer is actually on trial this week. And Supreme Court justices are routinely being threatened. Amy Coney Barrett told a story before Congress, particularly about how in the lead up to them overturning the Roe v. Wade decision, that made it so that abortion was a state's right issue and not a federal right. That decision leaked, and like the backlash was so bad that she had to go home with a bulletproof vest. So they're asking for more money to give each justice six additional security officers for their own protection, in a story that really just highlights how dangerous and violent America's political scene is becoming. Another story this week that's making a bunch of headlines here in the United States. You'll notice all the flags are at half mast because Senator Lindsey Graham has died. He was a Trump supporter and a longtime senator in Congress, most famous for his support of the State of Israel really just his desire to use America's military might to ensure world peace around the world, willing to go to war when many others were not. And so President Trump ordered the flags at half mast, and many people are wondering now with his death about the state of American-Israeli relationship. because he was such a strong supporter of Israel. And as we'll see here in this third story, House Democrats actually, half of them, pretty much half of Democrats voted this week to basically defund the state of Israel, to cut off all military aid to the state of Israel. Now, the U.S. hasn't cut off all military aid to the state of Israel, and the fact that half of all Democrats wasn't enough for that bill to pass. Pretty much all the Republicans except one voted against it. But still, it was like 100 Democrats. So the Democratic Party is now divided 50-50 on whether America should be giving military support to Israel. And that's a big change in American society. I feel like even 10 years ago, just considering the fact that Israel is the only Western-style republic in the Middle East, that both sides of the political spectrum agreed that we should be supporting the values of Western civilization against terrorist and Islamic theocracies trying to destroy it. Most Republicans still feel that way, but the Democratic Party has gotten to a point where it is actually 50-50. Whether we should be even sending military aid to Israel or whether we should cut that off completely.
And that ties right into another story, again, from here in the UK, where just a few hours ago, Andy Burnham officially became leader of the Labour Party. He will become the Prime Minister. I think he's scheduled to take office officially on Monday. And he gave a speech, I think it might have been last Friday, where he said that Britain had been too soft on Israel. He said that Britain was too slow to call for a ceasefire, that they needed to put more pressure on the Israeli government. And he promised, quote, to make sure that no British bombs or bullets can be used by the IDF in Gaza or in the West Bank. So, I mean, it's really the most radically left half of the Democratic Party in the US. That's the position, basically, of the current British government. And really, I mean, cutting off aid to Israel is actually a lot more mild than trying to put trade sanctions on Israel, which is what Andy Burnham wants. We also saw, there was also a story, I think the exhibit began earlier, but I saw a story this week about a new, basically pro-Hamas propaganda exhibit at the Canadian Museum for Human Rights. It's titled Palestine Uprooted, Nakba Past and Present, that presents Israel's very founding in 1948 as a tragedy and kind of tells this distorted story where the Jews went out and attacked innocent Arabs in order to establish a nation for themselves. Really the exact opposite of what happened. I mean, it's such a distortion of reality. You look at the facts, you look at the statistics, and you know, I think it is an undeniable fact that the IDF is the most moral army to have ever fought a modern, high-intensity urban conflict. The rate of civilian casualties caused by the IDF are lower than the rate of civilian casualties caused by U.S. forces in Iraq. And that is while Israel is fighting an enemy that is actively trying to get its own civilians killed. So, just a radical distortion of the truth, and Democratic politicians are complicit in it. Andy Burnham, Britain's next prime minister, is complicit in it. They're stirring up anti-Semitism all over the world. But I think it also shows really the power of Satan the devil, that hates the Jews, that hates the race that Jesus Christ was born into, the race that God chose to have his own son born into. And he's going to exalt the throne of David. Jesus Christ is going to rule the universe from the throne of David, a Jew, from New Jerusalem, that is right now Jerusalem in Israel. So, it shows that hatred and the power to really just distort event. I mean, this is part of the reason why we have this program, is so much, there is so much power there to distort pictures of reality. And that is what's happening. That is what's happening here. Did you have any other stories, Andrew?
Oh, and then one other big story a lot of people in the United States are talking about is President Donald Trump gave a speech on the risk to America's electoral system this week. primarily urging congressional representatives to vote for the Save America Act. Now, the Save America Act would mandate that people have to show proof of citizenship when they register to vote. They'd have to show photo ID when they actually go to the polls to vote. And they would actually have to go to the polls because most mail-in balloting would be made illegal. So it'd be like same-day voting, paper ballots, photo ID, in order to stop non-Americans from voting in elections, which has been a problem for the past several election cycles. He also mentioned a report that the Communist Party of China hacked into some of the United States voter roll systems and got information on about, many thousands of people. Now, that's not changing votes for many thousands of people, but just hacking the system, basically trying to gain information for an influence campaign to try to influence Americans to vote one way or the other. So that's not quite the same as a stolen vote like the Save America Act would be addressing. But it does still highlight the threat that there are advanced foreign powers like China with a whole team of cyber hackers who would try to influence the vote in America if they could. And so I feel like in some ways it's kind of two separate issues. You need the Save America Act to make sure that only American citizens are voting, but also an increased emphasis on cybersecurity in the United States, because there's hackers in many nations trying to influence our election systems, security systems, electrical systems, and many other vulnerabilities.
Great. Thank you for that, Andrew. And another story from the UK that does tie in with one of those that you mentioned earlier, the Supreme Court justices needing protection, as we saw. Well, it was last week, just before we came on the show, I think news was coming out in the national newspapers that one of Britain's elder stateswomen, you could say, Anne Widdecombe, was found dead. I thought about doing a little, I think we just recorded the show when I saw, and I thought about doing a piece to mention that she had died, but decided, well, we can mention it next week. It's she was 78 years old. You know, it's not too surprising. People do die at that age, and we just kind of assumed then it was natural causes. And then shortly after that, it broke that no, it wasn't natural causes. She was found in a pool of her own blood in her own home. The 78-year-old woman was brutally murdered. So just a shocking story there. She was a minister in John Major's government, but she's been a key supporter of Nigel Farage. She's probably been one of the people with the most gravitas from the Conservative Party that has defected to back Nigel Farage. Right now, she was the reform spokesman on immigration and justice, and she was regularly, even at 78 years old, on TV articulating the reformed case, I think in a way that few other leaders in the Reform Party were able to do in a kind of substantial, detailed way. And because she had ministerial experience, there was a credibility there that you know, at least I don't think you want a party that's all experienced politicians, but having some people that can advise, that have been in government before, that understand some of the pressures that come from that was very, very helpful. But she was stabbed to death. Now, we still don't know a lot of what's behind that. Initially, the police insisted, nope, no evidence, anything that it's all political, that it's all terror related. Then within a few days, counter-terror police were involved. They had to walk that back. We still haven't heard anything about exactly why. Every time they arrest someone, they emphasize that the person that they're arresting is white. So anyway, I don't know what what the angle currently is, but it shows the level of violence that we're getting to. The Supreme Court need more protection. Major political figures just being murdered in their own homes in Britain. We've also had some news from some important stories from Europe that I should run down quickly. The German Federal Police are pressing to be allowed to read encrypted messages. The Bundestag passed the Modernization of the Federal Police Act. That was also last week on Friday. It still needs to be approved by the Federal Council. But it seems like that's very likely to happen. So they'll be able to read encrypt messages, use AI-powered facial recognition, use AI to analyze footage, potentially even look at AI pre-crime. I mean, we're getting into very sci-fi themes here, where they'll look at footage to work out if a crime is occurring or about to occur, whether they can use drones and locate phones more easily. Now, Germany has a lot of restrictions on what its police can and cannot do, understandably so, because they don't want, you know, because of the way that Adolf Hitler used the police to uphold his regime. Now the police are getting a lot of powers they were deliberately barred from having. An important trend to keep watching in Germany. The same time that this is happening, you're having the fringe right or the far right rise in Germany. German Chancellor Friedrich Merz is trying to see them off. He's got a new image. You might have seen him. He's trying to look cool. He's wearing sunglasses a lot and fashionable jackets. He is putting forward, he's really trying to emphasize reform, that we are making reforms. It's early days yet to see if that is actually coming, but really you see the appetite within Germany for major changes, and his response in pushing for reform is a symptom that he is feeling that pressure. German arms industry, as usual, we have news about them going from strength to strength. They're rapidly increasing their weapons exports. In the first half of 2026, the government approved 4 times as many arms exports as the same period last year. That's $16 billion worth of arms exports. And this money is increasingly going outside of the EU and NATO, looking at and they're starting to export to a lot of other powers. They're also starting to make equipment beyond their shores. The drone maker Helsing, they announced on Tuesday that they will have a manufacturing base in West Virginia, making their AI strike drones right in the middle of America. And French Rafale fighter jets capable of carrying nuclear weapons. These joined in with 2 German Eurofighters for mid-air refueling exercises. It's okay, 4 aeroplanes might not seem that big, but it is a practical step to these 2 countries having joint nuclear deterrence and working together to be able to deploy nuclear bombs. A French nuclear exercise is planned later this year that would include German military personnel. This is building towards those exercises. And France is using its nuclear bombs to empower European unity and German power. And it's really going to help them dominate the continent. So keep watching that story as well. Well, moving on now to Asia. I don't think anyone watching the show is going to be at all surprised to learn that Russia and China are allies and that they work together. But this week we got some leaked inside information shedding some new light on just how close that relationship is. To give us more on that, we'll go to our Asia correspondent, Jeremiah Jacques.
Yes, that's right. Military cooperation between Russia and China is far deeper than either government has disclosed and far deeper than most analysts previously thought. We know this because of these secret documents that were leaked and analyzed by a publication called The Insider just a few days ago. And these documents show that Russia and China are pooling their resources in some really remarkable ways to push against the U.S., to advance their imperialist goals, and to develop some cutting-edge weaponry that neither of them would be able to make on their own. The documents include a signed protocol from a highly secretive meeting that Russian military leaders held with some Chinese generals in Moscow in mid-2023. And they also include 4 slideshow presentations from a military forum held in Guangzhou, China in November of 2023. So all of these meetings were shrouded in absolute secrecy, but someone leaked the slides and the protocol. And so now we were able to see basically what they discussed, and it's quite chilling to get this behind-the-scenes look. One of the biggest revelations was that Russia and China are jointly developing a very advanced missile defense system. This is specifically made to counter America's most advanced weaponry, including American hypersonic missiles. This joint system is expected to surpass anything that either Russia or China currently possess. Another big revelation was that these nations are actively working to destroy Starlink. That is Elon Musk's low Earth orbit satellite constellation. One of the leaked slideshows is all about how Starlink has become this indispensable pillar of Western military power, including in Ukraine's stand against Russia. So they're actively working to defeat Starlink in some specific ways. There's also some very telling acknowledgments in these documents showing that China, of course, knows that it has loads of technological prowess, but no battlefield experience. And then they both know that Russia, on the other hand, has plenty of experience from its 4.5 years of war against Ukraine. So these two are keenly aware of their different strengths and weaknesses, and it really is kind of the bargain that shapes their relationship. Russia provides the combat experience, and China provides the technological scale. We see this especially in the way that they're collaborating right now on drones. You know, China makes hundreds of different models of attack drones now. And in these leaks, we learned that the Chinese are in ongoing talks with Russian officials, learning specifically how certain drones perform on the battlefields. And then China is making constant refinements to their drones based on that Russian input. And then they sell the new refined models back to the Russians to be able to use them more effectively. That has been kind of this self-reinforcing feedback loop that's been open for years now, just maximizing the value of both Russia's battlefield experience and China's technical prowess. And then the last revelation that I'll mention here is about a strategy to overcome Western sanctions. There is open acknowledgement in these documents that in their joint projects, China provides critical chips and electronics that Russia is no longer able to easily acquire because of sanctions. And then Russia, for its part, contributes resources, which it has plenty of, and also, as I mentioned, specialized military knowledge. So with this arrangement, we see a real symbiosis between these two, and they're able to break bottlenecks that neither would be able to easily break on their own. So it is a truly dramatic level of cooperation, far deeper than what either side has acknowledged, as I said. And it shows, among other things, that China's claim of being neutral in Russia's war against Ukraine is a total lie. We've known from the beginning that that was false, but these meetings that took place since the war began and the level of help that they show China directly giving to Russia, it just obliterates any of those Chinese claims of neutrality. So it is a very significant story showing just a tremendously important and powerful partnership between Russia and China. And this is something that the trumpet keeps a close eye on because prophecy warns that a vast Asian alliance will take shape in the modern era. And it shows that it'll be a force that shakes the world. You can see passages about that in Ezekiel 38, which says a Russian individual will head this Asian alliance, and also Revelation 9, which says it'll have 200 million soldiers. And in the early weeks of Russia's full-scale war on Ukraine, Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury explained how current events are fulfilling these ancient prophecies. He wrote, "The rise of Vladimir Putin, Russia's invasions, a budding alliance between Russia, China, and other nations, these are all signs that Bible prophecies are true." This is an article that really covers quite a lot of ground from a high vantage point. So for anyone who would like to better understand the Russia-China partnership from that kind of perspective, I hope you'll check this article out. It's called "Why We Must Warn About Vladimir Putin."
Well, thank you very much for that, Jeremiah. Another just very clear, fulfilled Bible prophecy, even just like the Seagate story that we were talking about right at the start. What else do you have for us from Asia?
Yes, first up, a quick story here on Japan's intelligence apparatus. Ever since World War II, Japan hasn't really had any kind of centralized agency for its intelligence, like, you know, MI6 over in your homeland there, or the CIA here. Those are the kinds of agencies that most powerful countries have. But Japan's agency was dismantled after it was defeated at the end of World War II, just like so much of Japan's military power was dismantled at that time. And for the 80 years since then, the Japanese have just had kind of a loose system where different government bodies and police organizations collect intelligence on their own, but they don't really share it between the various groups. But now they're changing all that. A new report from the New York Times on Monday shows that Japan is building a world-class centralized intelligence agency, and analysts see this as just one more sign of Japan's dramatic emergence from decades of post-war restraint, military and strategic restraint. Japan is fully abandoning pacifism. It's normalizing its military, which we see in record defense spending and offensive strike capabilities for the first time since World War II. We see it also in this very dramatic loosening of Japan's military exports. And now, to that list, we can add Japan's new centralized intelligence agency. And then just one final story here about how China is viewed by people around the world. A new Pew Research poll shows that China is now viewed more favorably than the United States. They interviewed more than 40,000 people in 36 countries around the world, and the results are clear. The U.S. has lost its luster, largely because of how the America First agenda is perceived and the erratic tariffs and questions about U.S. commitments. So most of the world now has more confidence in China and in its leader, Xi Jinping, than in the U.S. and its leader. So it's just more evidence that as America weakens, China's star is rising.
Well, thank you very much for that, Jeremiah. Thank you to all of our commentators today and to Matthew Friesen for engineering and production. That is about all we have time for. I'll mention once again that free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. It really is your essential guide to understanding world news. And again, there's a lot in there about what you need to do in response to that as well, in response to seeing God's power in this world and in world events. We'd be very happy to send that to you. You can get that on our website, thetrumpet.com. If you have any questions, comments, difficulties ordering that, you can contact us at trumpetworld@thetrumpet.com. We would be very happy to hear from you. We'll be back with our regular show next week. Until then, keep watching your world.